Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling podcasting network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron. Back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, so
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for January 13th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, I know that we ended up kind of recording on the 30th, and we were like, geez, like this is the latest we will ever record in a year. And then we had this layoff here, so I feel like that this is the first time we've really talked in 2026. So happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year. It's a new year. It's fine. I don't love the pageantry of the new year, as I'm sure we've talked about at some point in time. Happy to be back. I gotta be honest, did not realize until all the shows happened just how much footage we were going to have to consume, which I think luckily these shows are pretty entertaining, and thus it was a good problem to have. But boy, after a week where you had New Japan and the Tanahashi stuff, and you had the debacle of Noah, and you had some All Japan stuff, some of which I really enjoyed, you know, Dragon Gate takes that first week off, and man, do they come back with a vengeance in the second week of January.
Yeah, and I feel like for us, like long-timers with the promotion, it's so kind of contrary to how that first like few weeks of the year would be, like the first swing through all the major cities in the world. They would have to like manufacture those tournaments, like the six-man tournament that they did a couple of years, or like the East and West Festival last year. And it always kind of felt like that Dragon Gate like kind of had to find their footing by that cork and show that everyone's already wiped out in Tokyo for the start of the year for. And instead, Dragon Gate decided, okay, we're going to hold off. Y'all do your shows in Tokyo, and then we're going to have the return of Big Boss Shimizu and have him turn on the next night, and then devote the entire loops worth of shows and network shows around Big Boss Shimizu's return, his turn on Natural Vibes, and just resolving kind of like this big just thing that has completely turned Dragon Gate on its head. It just starting the year within its first five shows, at least on the network, as it feels like everything is just off to the races already this year.
Yeah, we had talked in previous years, you know, over the last 2 years when they added Gate of Bayside in Yokohama, that they had finally figured out something to do for the first 2 months of the year, because for so long it didn't really feel like the calendar started until Champion Gate in Osaka in March, and then even then you had Dead or Alive as your first big show at the beginning of May. And with the addition of Gate of Bayside in 2024 and 2025, it felt like, okay, you've got a bit of a noteworthy January now. Of course, because of venues going under construction and venues closing, and the way Dragon Gate has had to rework some of their calendar, now we have Uno Dos Tres in Fukuoka at the end of February. But things were happening on these shows, certainly, I think, I mean, I'm more so since maybe Kakuta has won the title, did it feel like, oh, wow, there's a lot of things that we have to pay attention to here. And a lot of them were primarily just all the things revolving around Shimizu. But even with Kakuta and Yoshioka, I thought there was some interesting stuff there. There's the Brave Gate match that I want to talk about. But a lot of newsworthy things happening on these shows. And as I sit here and look at my fresh and clean 2026 match of the year tracking spreadsheet, across all the shows that we watched, I have five matches at 4 stars or higher, which means that we got a lot of good on these shows as well.
Yeah, I ended up actually at 5 with one that was very close to it. It's just, it was something where how these shows were kind of constructed, where you were able to have Shimizu make his like formal appearance on the first night in Kobe on the 8th, and then you have the turn on the 9th, and then on the 10th, well, you're in Nagoya, the new sold out venue that UT basically packed in the house. You have a UT match based around there, and then the first Osaka number 2 show of the year, you have him versus Strong Machine J, and then that's just the backbone of like the Brave Gate match that you mentioned. And really, it feels like that we're entering 2026 with a lot of kind of open questions throughout the card, and even like more so as we like left that King of Gate finals versus Dream Gate match at that last Korakuen in December, felt like Cielo was going to be kind of the direction with him kind of stepping up in the Shun marionette play, but instead Cielo's kind of his side quest with Kato has led him to kind of a dead end. So now more focus going back to Yoshioka versus Kakuta as like the potential next Dreamgate match. It's really interesting to me how they kind of throughout the five shows got these plates spinning, and in a lot of ways with like some big like changes in actions. I mean, Shimizu taking Shun Skywalker out, then you have Cielo adrift for a couple days, and guess what? Hamare is back, and it just feels like throughout like the units, and maybe not necessarily in the title scenes outside of the Bravegate match that we got on the opening night of the year, it feels like a lot of plates are already spinning.
Well, given the schedule ahead where you're going to have this Corkin, which is on Sunday, and Mike, I can't remember the last time. I mean, I've covered this promotion for 11 years. I don't remember a weekend Corkin ever.
I think there might have been one during like the closed venue kind of period during COVID, but it was rare for them to even have a Friday Corkin, at least during my time covering the promotion. And if they've had a Sunday Corkin, it can't be much more than maybe one or two throughout the last 27 years.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe, and I'm not going to look because ultimately it's irrelevant, and the fact that I have the bandwidth for any of this is sad, but I feel like maybe when they had to run Shinjuku face for the Summer Adventure Tag League 10 years ago, those might have been on a weekend. I hate the fact that I even would have that thought, but other than that, I mean, I don't believe they've run a weekend Corkin since at least 2014. So we have the Sunday Corkin, we have Memorial Gate on a Sunday, we have a February Corkin after that, and then that'll lead us into, you know, a pretty light schedule going into Uno Dos Tres, but ultimately two Corkins and a Memorial Gate, given what they did on these shows, the groundwork that they laid, that is a show that should feel really big. It should feel really hot. They've got two Corkin chances to make something happen and make me even more excited than I already am, given that we don't know any definite direction for that show. I mean, at this point, I would be shocked if it's not Yoshioka versus Kakuta headlining, and I am trying as we record to figure out if I can get any intel on when Flamita might be back in Japan, because if he's back in February, then I think we might get a unit disbands match on that show as well. But there's a lot of opportunity here. There's a lot of strong groundwork that's been laid. Because again, like I said, you know, Kakuta won the title in August, and it was a promotion that for the last few months of the year, it was quality in the sense that I was enjoying the wrestling that I was watching, but I was having a bit of a hard time latching on to certain things in the promotion. And we can get into the Shimizu stuff now, because I think we all certainly have something to sink our teeth into at the moment.
That's right. So it really kind of the main character of this slew of shows ended up being Big Boss Shimizu. We knew that a return from Shimizu was going to be looming in 2026 when he took the 6-month suspension from a contract violation and then opted to have another 6 months that he was going to have basically as an absence for the remainder of 2025. GM Ryo Saito brings out Shimizu right before intermission on the 8th, and Shimizu comes out. He is noticeably a lot skinnier. He has like slicked back hair, which I mean, not necessarily a big change for him, and a suit that basically looked like that he was swallowed up in or was David Byrne and stopped making sense.
David Byrne / early 2000s NBA draft night suit is sort of the vibe that I was getting from Shimizu.
Yeah, you know, it needed some color to be the draft night suit.
That's true.
But you had Shimizu come out, cut a promo doing kind of the return, and then Natural Vibes comes back to welcome him back, and then the main event on the second night, or the semi-main event on the second show of the year, the back-to-back in Kobe Sambo Hall, was Natural Vibes, Strong Machine J, KZ, UT, and Big Boss Shimizu in his first match in 15 months. I mean, it was the end of November through that, so 13 months. First match in 13 match against Gaja Dokuro, Madoka Kakuta, Kota Minoru, Jason Lee, and Kai with the finish. Shimizu turning basically in the final moments after a Big Boss press and KZ time dive. Shot put slam KZ. Kakuta gets a 1-foot pin on KZ for the turn. Then Shimizu absolutely obliterates the rest of Natural Vibes and the new physique Big Boss Shimizu, who they say he's 90 kilos, which is remarkable considering like he was a guy that was like he had health concerns growing up that like he was like had issues losing weight and gaining muscle. But he looks like a basically a Greek god figure that you would see chiseled in marble if you go to the Mediterranean. Like if you're going to Rome, you saw a Roman statue, it would look a lot like how Big Boss Shimizu looks like physically. But Shimizu is now full on heel with Gajah Dokoro, and I think it's worth first just talking about him coming back from the suspension and then kind of the rest of the events of Kobe. But Case, we knew he was coming back. We knew that at least there was no real mention of demotions or anything like this publicly coming out of the promotion. But Case, I did not think we would be off to the races within 24 hours of a guy coming back from, at least to my knowledge, the longest suspension in Dragon System history.
Yeah, you know, I incorrectly predicted a lot of this because I had made the comment last year when Shimizu was suspended, and I fed this note to Joe Lanza on the flagship Patreon. He was doing a contract season update, mm-hmm. and he was asking me about Marcus Mathers, but I also wanted to be sure that he mentioned the Shimizu thing, which is that when the Shimizu situation unfolded in November of 2024, the primary belief was that it had something to do with Glate, and I was told at the time that it was not something to do with Glate. I think Glate even released a statement, right, mm-hmm. saying that they weren't trying to poach Shimizu and they weren't going to poach Dragon Gate wrestlers going forward, which is an insane thing in hindsight. That I think it just perhaps speaks to the irrelevancy of Glate that we forget that. But that was a really weird move.
Yeah, and I remember at least as of the events that were going on, at least as of the time, like we had a story that we couldn't either verify or go with that was pretty much quickly disabused given how long Shimizu was kind of out and with it. And it never came to us that he was jumping, there was any kind of contract things. I think it was just the most recent history of disaffected Dragon Gate wrestlers ending up in Glate being like just like the number one conclusion that people and fans could go to when there was just this level of opacity with what the company does, which was completely kind of what we were expecting, that the company would be completely opaque about this until he shows back up. And he showed back up, but I didn't think he would be already being pushed like a dominant monster in a heel group. I was expecting him to get kind of eased back in and not have be the focused for a good period of time before they would decide to kind of take the restrictor plate off him. But that's not the case whatsoever.
No. And that was, you know, that was the point that I was going to make is I had said last year, it was in May that they said, okay, he's going to be out for the rest of the year. He'll come back in 2026. And I thought at that point that we had seen the end of any sort of real Shimizu push going forward. I was just having a hard time imagining him being gone for that length of time and then him coming back and it not being awkward. I just wasn't sure what it was going to look like. There's no history of anything like this in the Dragon system.
Or the company putting a immediate level of responsibility onto him. I fully kind of expected him to be doing touch football 10-man tags, basically, and probably doing like Ultimo humor. Like that was what I was expecting. And that was completely contrary of what we've gotten.
Yeah, and it's nice to see. So he comes back on the first Kobe show, which was not announced ahead of time. It was not something that I was expecting. It was very exciting to be following along in real time and to have, you know, what felt like a truly authentic Dragon Gate moment in the sense that it was something real. It was something raw. You could see the emotion pouring out of Shimizu. You could see the emotion pouring out of UT and KZ and even to some degree with the Mask Strong Machine J. And so when it was announced that he was coming back the next day, I was keenly aware of that show and what was going on. And I was trying to follow it live to the best of my ability as I was getting into work at that time. And at that point, I did not see the heel turn coming. So I know some people did. Some people sort of had that read from the jump, but I did not. In terms of the execution of the things in Kobe, you know, I wouldn't change a thing about the promo. That seemed like a very cool moment. From the people I've talked to that were at the show, it seemed like a very cool moment. Again, something almost akin to the Uha Nation farewell, just a very real, very raw thing that you very rarely see in pro wrestling. It would be nice if wrestling had more moments like that. For the heel turn itself, I am not crazy about the way that they did it. I think they missed an opportunity. I mean, they could have copied one of the greatest angles in the history of the company beat by beat And I think it would have been far more successful than what they ended up doing. I don't understand why we needed to see Shimizu wrestle 13 or 14 minutes as a member of Natural Vibes getting beaten up by Gaja Dokuro. I think this should have been sold as on January 9th, Shimizu returns to the ring. He's going to dance with Natural Vibes again. And in the middle of that dance, he turns on Vibes a la Shingo Takagi on BB Hulk in 2008. And then I think you could have done some impromptu main event, some 5-on-5 thing. You know, whether you want Mochizuki and Susumu to come out or Daiki and Sahara if you want to push the young guys like they did with Yamamura and Shimizu in 2017. There are a lot of things they could have done. I really think it was a mistake to have him wrestle that match as a member of Natural Vibes and then turn. That took some of the turn, that took some of the sting of the turn out of it for me.
Yeah, I mean, Shimizu comes out. He's wearing all black, just shooter tights and boots. And immediately, you know, something is up, right? Like, yeah, part of it is that he's showing off the new physique. But I mean, it was very clear, like, at least, even though I was completely spoiled, but the second that someone sees Natural Vibes, the three of them all come out in their similar colored gear, and Shimizu comes out just in black tights, the back of your hair, the hair on the back of your neck goes up. Like, it kind of tips it. And yeah, then you get into the whole doing the ruse match, which has been like kind of one of the things that I think GM Ryo Saito has been really reliant on, that I think that the more you kind of see it, the more it becomes just like, it's not effective. Like, because you have the whole thing about, like, that's the exact same thing that happened with Kakuta in the cage at Dead or Alive in Aichi last May. And you just kind of sit there and you go, like, why would the guys willingly, like, do the match unless it's the idea that you're going to stab them at, like, their most emotionally raw moment in the match? Like, it does not feel like it's always, like, the best course of action and for, like, the heel turn and then for, like, the thing. And it seems like it's now a recurring trope in this promotion.
And I think it's just a matter of the stakes of the match not being high enough, because if I recall correctly, when Big Ben broke up, did Ben turn first or did Shimizu turn first?
Ben turned first, because Ben turned first. 2019, Ben turned to go take the belt off Pac.
That's right. But okay, so this was 2018, because it was the August 2018 Korakuen, because it was a Twin Gate defense. It was Doi and somebody. I got to look this up now, because this is going to bug me.
It might have been Doi and Ishida.
Or, yeah, that's, I guess, because I know there was a lot of Dragon Kid Ishida stuff at the time, but I remember they were wrestling Big Ben, and they had... Sorry, I hate to do this on the air, but now it's going to bug me, because I have to make sure I get the scenario right, because there's a larger point that I want to make here. So if I go to Shimizu's 2018 Korakuen Hall, I know it was the August Korakuen, and it was... Okay, so it was Hulk and Yamato defending the Twin Gate against Shimizu and Doi. I thought for sure this was Big Ben, but this was Shimizu and Doi. And this is one of those deals where it was a 22-minute match where at the end of the match, Shimizu turns on Doi. He breaks away from Maximum, and he turns heel and joins, at that time, Antios. His first match as a heel, Big R Shimizu, Eita, and Shingo Takagi versus BB Hulk, Yamato, and Yosuke Santa Maria Aichi. Yeah, that it happened a million years ago.
I remember that match vividly, because Shimizu fucked up getting into the ring, and everyone was like, oh, he looks like he has Bam Bam Bigelow's gear on. And at that point, the heel turn was completely deflated, and arguably Big R Shimizu would not be the same until after he lost the Shimizu name. Like,
yes,
that was a part of a big downward slide for the guy.
I want to go through some of the history of Shimizu here in just a minute. They really did give him and Eita a real strong run as a tag team together. And there's a part of 2019 where Shimizu was pretty in focus. But you're right. And the point I make there is, you know, in the context of the Twin Gate match, that end of the match deception works pretty well. And I remember Doi selling it really well. But in the context of this, where there's nothing larger at stake in this match, it's the match is built on this idea of Shimizu returning, and quite frankly, it doesn't really matter if Vibes win or if Vibes lose. I just think they made a huge mistake doing the traditional pro wrestling thing of having him fight against his future allies in this match for so long and then having him turn at the end of it. I think it would have been far more effective with the gear and with the look and with the new demeanor. I just wish they would have cut all of this off immediately and had him interrupt a Natural Vibes dance and then turn heel there.
Yeah, because the actual turn and everything with Shimizu after that point on the show, because he then comes out and in the post-match of Cielo and Kato, Shun starts to run down Shimizu, and Shimizu just lays him out, and Shun has not been on card since.
No, like, Shun has a hip injury. I don't know when he's going to be back. His homecoming show is next week, so it'll be interesting to see if he's on that show.
But like as soon as the turn happened with Shimizu, it's exactly what one would hope that Big Boss Shimizu would have been back in 2018 with that heel turn. You know, like the team was great with Big E, with Eita and Big R Shimizu for like that fall going into like Kobe World that year. That was a fun 2018. I remember that team vividly, but it just the heel run, like there was a thing that people couldn't take the guy seriously just because of kind of how goofy he is. And now no nonsense Shimizu, it looks like the most powerful version that he ever could have been, and absolutely feels like a Kakuta mold heel and like trying to get Gajah Dokuro kind of identity away from Zebrats. This is the kind of thing that you want to see in a newer heel unit, kind of have like this guy do a different twist on a heel turn, and it just kind of feeling great, to be quite frank.
So I want to talk about the heel unit and the way it's constructed in just a second. Just for the context of just who Big Boss Shimizu is, and the fact that, you know, I'm sure there's now a sizable chunk of people who are listening to this that haven't seen Shimizu wrestle because he's been gone for so long. I was going back through some notes last week anyways, because I was putting together a hypothetical Hiroshi Tanahashi comp DVD, which was a very fun project. And it's putting that DVD together was funny because once you hit 2012, there's this 5-year run from the Minoru Suzuki King of Pro Wrestling match to the Naito Dome match in 2017, where when you start to list out his matches individually, it's funny how good they are. Like, it becomes a comical exercise of writing down Tanahashi's 2013 matches, writing down Tanahashi's 2014 matches, writing down his 2015 matches. It's unbelievable. But I was going back through some old notes that I have, and it coincided with Shimizu coming back and Shimizu being more on my mind. And I went through the wrestler rankings that I have by year going back to 2016, because at that point it would have been a project called the We Don't Know Wrestling 100. And then there's a few years there where I don't have the rankings, and then it goes into SFM 50 after that. But just to contextualize how highly I've thought of Shimizu, and this will certainly bleed into the Nagoya shows and the Osaka show in terms of the work that he was doing in the ring. But in 2016, I had him ranked as the 10th best wrestler in the world. In 2017, I had him ranked as the 11th best wrestler in the world. 2018, I don't have a list, but it's a year where you know, we just talked about some of the Big Ben stuff and Maximum being really the sole bright spot of the promotion that year. He did excellent work in Maximum. 2019, I don't have a ranking, but that's the year where I think a lot of the Big E stuff lives in the forefront of my mind, and I think he was probably pretty underrated that year. 2020, he's not in my top 50. 2021, I had him 39th. 2022, I did not rank him in my top 50. 2023, I had him at 12, and the SFM 50 had him at 28. And in 2024, even with missing the last month of the year, I had him as the 35th best wrestler in the world. So over the course of the last 10 years now, I've had him at 10, 11, 39, 12, and 35 in some of the years that I have lists for. So despite the dramatic change in presentation, the new gear, the fact that this is a different character, and I do hope that he gets a new name in Cork, and I think that is sort of the last piece that he's missing right now because he's a guy that's changed his name so much. We're talking about a guy that when he's on is comfortably a top 50 wrestler in the world. And more often than not, I think about him a level above that, a guy who can crack the top 25. So getting him back into the swing of things, especially if Shun is going to be missing time, we don't know when Monte is coming back, we don't know when Flamita is coming back. They now have a real workhorse in that heel unit, and I'm very excited to see what his match quality output is going to look like.
Yeah, and you talk about him in those years. We mentioned the Eita tag team and a little bit about the Ben tag team. Like the unique thing about him is if you look throughout the years in his tag team pairings, like even like the KZ tag team that he had with this, like he very much was one of probably, if you're just looking at tag team workers and like for and people who operate in tag teams, one of the probably top eight individual tag team wrestlers of that time period.
Mike, we've done the segment. I think other than Doi, he's the best tag team wrestler the company's ever had. I still think about that short-lived tag team he had with Susumu and how enjoyable all of their matches were together.
Yeah. And like the shot put Jumbo Nohashi combo they were doing.
They were great. That was a really fun team. And that is sort of one of these deals. It's why I don't know if protective is the right word, but it's why I'm very focused on the idea of Kame and Rita having a very long run as these Twin Gate champions, which I don't know if that's going to happen now. But because as time has gone on, there's been a few of these teams where it's like, oh man, they only had a few loops together. Like, I really wanted to see more of that. And the Shimizu Susumu team is at the top of that list, but you have Ben and you have Doi and you have Eita and then you have KZ. I go back to that Memorial Gate show from 2023, Shimizu and KZ versus the Mochizukis, which is one of my favorite modern era Twin Gate matches that there was. And I just don't think anybody watched that show, so it didn't resonate with people. But he's an incredible tag worker. He's an incredible multi-man worker. There was a point in time where he was probably the safest bet this company had for great singles matches as well. I look at the Mochizuki match from 2017, which was one of my top 10 matches that year. I think about the Dreamgate Challenge in 2023 against Kakuta and the great match that was. It's loaded through. I mean, the King of Gate Finals against Yamato in 2016, that was an absolute classic. I mean, this is a guy who, despite all of the out-of-the-ring stuff that has always cast a shadow over him, long before the suspension, we all knew that Shimizu didn't exactly have the reputation that, say, Yamato does. He wasn't considered to be a smart guy. At times, he wasn't considered to be a hard worker. We always knew that despite his talent, there was a ceiling on him, not because of what he does in the ring, but because of what he does out of the ring. But I think that really has, for a certain group of the Dragon Gate fan base, really shadowed just what an excellent wrestler this guy is. And it's not revisionist history. I have these firsthand accounts year by year of going, no, think about wrestling in 2016 compared to what it is now. And I thought Shimizu was the 10th best wrestler in the world that year.
Yeah. And it's very clear that he hasn't lost a step. And if anything, like the only, in case this isn't me defending it whatsoever, the only thing that I could say about the 1-9 match being laid out, it was, and having that 13 minutes of wrestling before the turn, maybe the guy needed some get his win back a little bit. So letting him go 13 minutes there is at least like building back up the cardio, because after that, like the three other shows with fully heel Shimizu, where he had two singles matches and a trios main event, he's just as good as he was during those years that you mentioned. He's already in the third show of the year, the Nagoya Day Show from the 10th, teaming with Kakuta and Yoshiki Kato, already working excellently as his character in trios matches. And then he follows it up with like two of at least with the way that January is, it will be matches of the month level caliber stuff, with the hometown match against UT and then in Osaka against Strong Machine J. It feels like he's just off to the races after 13 months off.
So let's talk about the body transformation. I'll tell you, from this time last year, I've lost 50 pounds, but I do not have the
congratulations, by the way.
I don't know how I'm afraid. I'm honest to God afraid that I have like an autoimmune disease now, because I've worked at losing weight, but I it feels wrong to have lost this much weight. But thank you very much.
You got a tapeworm there.
I don't know. I don't know what's happening at this point, because I keep on losing weight, and I'm eating better, and like I move around a little bit more, but like it's too much weight for the output that I've put in. And it's like, I feel guilty now. I don't feel like I earned this in the way that other people have, but I've lost 50 pounds since last year, but I don't have the muscle that Shimizu does. I always felt like Shimizu's look no matter what the gear was, once we moved away from, you know, Ryotsu Shimizu into Big R Shimizu and everything from there on out, I've always felt like he's had an excellent look. I've liked his body. I maybe at times didn't love some of the RED stuff when he was really leaning into the sleaze, but otherwise, I've always enjoyed the physicality of Shimizu. Do you feel like he's lost any aura by changing his look in the way that he has?
No, and I think like also it is worth like saying like Shimizu was someone who grew up with like illness as a kid, and like one of the reasons why he became like a track and field athlete was like that was the way that he was able to get exercise a lot as a kid. So like part of the reason why he became such a sterling like shot put thrower in school was because that's what he was kind of able to do. So like the fact that he's gone through this transformation, and I don't think like he loses power. No, that's kind of like a topic of like, oh, should he still kind of do the shot put slam when he's not so he is at 90 kilos now. He previously was listed at 115, so he's lost about 60 pounds, and I think he looks awesome. I think it's a good look. I think the tights, these aren't going to be his permanent tights. There's no skull on it yet. So I think that this was kind of the gear that he got made for this. And then later, but like after the turn is, he can get the other gear made, right? But I don't think that like he loses anything by having like that much of his weight loss, especially when like you see just obviously like the kind of shape he is in. I think it's actually, in a way, kind of a seamless transformation in like those two kind of styles of like power builds for like his style of wrestler. I think it works.
So I'm now with you. If you would have asked me directly out of the Kobe shows, I would have strongly disagreed, but I thought the work was so strong in Nagoya and the work was so strong in Osaka that I see what he's doing and I like it. And I feel very strongly that he should keep the shot put slam. I think it, if anything, looks better with this new look. It's because it's not as high angle.
His hand so looks huge.
Yeah, too. It's just it works. I mean, look, I think that's one of the, there's probably years where I voted that best move of the year in the Observer Awards. I just think that's such an outstanding move, you know, anyways. And I would like to see him keep that. I'd be very entertained by that. It does lead me to this overarching question that I have about the heel unit. I talked about a month ago about how I'm just having a hard time with this Kakuta run. I thought from the turn in May through him winning the belt, like I really liked the way that he was handled on those Korakuen shows, and I really liked his presentation. I thought he looked really dominant. And ever since then, I've just been very apathetic about Kakuta. It's not that I feel strongly one way or the other. He just hasn't done a ton that has kept me super engaged. And when I look at this heel unit and when I compare them to heel units of the past, you know, the obvious ones, you can go to the workout obsessed Blood Generation. You can go to the workout obsessed Muscle Outlaws and the sort of natural succession that that was. You can look at a unit like Mad Blanky that even without BB Hulk, by the time that he had left that unit, they still had a very defined aesthetic in a vibe to that group that made sense. Verzerk had this overwhelming cockiness that was not only distributed on down by Shingo, but Naruki Doi and Yamato. RED, especially post-Pac, was this super sleazy heel unit that at times was overbearing in the way that it was presented, but they had a very clear aesthetic and I knew who they were. Z-Bratz, as time went on, like, we really got to see a few different incarnations of that unit, but there are a few there that were really, really strong, and it felt like I knew Z-Bratz. I don't feel like I know what Gaja Dokuro is at this point. I don't know what this unit's going for. I don't know what their aesthetic is. Now, between, you know, Kakuta and Minoru and Jason and Kato and this and ripped Shimizu, it's like, okay, well, they're kind of muscle heads. They're kind of giants, but it's not, you know, they don't love working out like Blood Generation did, but they're not these like emo kids like Mad Blanky were. I just don't know what this unit is.
And I think some of that is because you look at the leader, Kakuta, like the most we could say about him as a heel is that he smashes things with his ass and his arm as hard as he can and tries to knock you out, right? Like that's Kakuta's thing. He's angry that no one else followed him when he named the Reiwa Big Six, but like now he's just kind of putting people through the paces now that he has taken the crown and has decided, like, okay, none of y'all stepped up, so I'm going to destroy you. And I don't think that that kind of character lends to being like the aesthetic of a unit, you know? It's just like, because that's just so understated when you compare it to kind of the past with it. And that's why, like, I look at Shimizu and I go, like, okay, I see a commonality between Kakuta and Shimizu being like the new ingredients added into the heel unit, and that they are the two like things that do not have really links to Z-Brats. Yeah, Kakuta virtually had 2.5 months as a Z-Brat member, but we did, but that was not really a thing. So did Shun Skywalker as an RED member. Like those, I don't think you really count. But I think that like these two have like kind of their own kind of aesthetic that maybe in style that maybe trickles down to people like Kato, but I don't know necessarily if it works as much with like your Minolis and Kais, you know?
And
I think that's part of the issue.
I'm hung up on this idea where, and maybe to some people it's obvious, but it's not to me, where I don't know if Kakuta at this point, I think it was obvious May through August, but I don't know at this point if he is supposed to be to steal a phrase from yesteryear, you know, a gym class bully type heel, or if he's supposed to be like a brooding back of the class type misunderstood guy. Like, I don't know how he's presenting himself, because I feel like we're getting at times very different versions of him, and the in-ring stays the same, but it's the character work that, like, I know who Ishin is, I know who Kato is. Jason Lee was so fucking good in Osaka. That was really nice to see. And Shimizu seems to have a very clear outline of who he is now, but when you look at the leader and the way it trickles down throughout the unit, like, I'm kind of ready to see them get blown up, and I know that's not going to happen anytime soon, but I feel like this is just a holding pattern for something greater. Now, it does raise the interesting point when you look ahead to Uno Dos Tres at the end of February, and we would assume at this point, Mike, is it safe to say that Kakuta versus Yoshioka is the odds-on main event favorite for that?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I think the Cielo side quest is done and dusted, and we are now just moving on. Like that segment never happened.
Oh, we'll talk about the Cielo thing. I think people are being weird about the Cielo thing. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But assuming it's Kakuta versus Yoshioka, I think you have a very safe off ramp to get the belt off of Kakuta, not because you need to, but because the situation calls for it. And if you go back to a babyface champion, specifically Yoshioka, that immediately opens the window for Yoshioka Shimizu, Yoshioka Ishin, Yoshioka Kato, and because of their history, Yoshioka Minoru as well. And those are four really intriguing, just on a number of levels, really intriguing Dreamgate matches. Not to mention, you know, 10-year anniversary of the class of 2016. And if you have Yoshioka with the belt, I certainly think Shun versus Yoshioka as a Kobe World main event is a possibility. I think Ben versus Yoshioka is a Kobe World main event possibility. I think this is the year that Hyo gets a Dreamgate challenge. And so you have all of those there. So assuming they land the plane and the direction that they want to go is Yoshioka, I think they could come out of all of this in a very smooth and very clear direction. But right now you have an issue where you have this heel unit where I think Shimizu is far more interesting than Kakuta. I think Ishin is far more interesting than Kakuta. Kakuta's far more advanced than Kato, but I find Kato on a show and show out basis to be more interesting than Kakuta just because of the development we're watching in real time. And yet Kakuta's the Dreamgate champion. And I find that to be a little bit concerning as we sit here in the middle of January.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Assistant customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
I guess, like, the Kakuta presentation, I'm able to turn that off as soon as the Dreamgate matches are, because I feel like that I'm enjoying
the Dreamgate matches
run.
Have been really good. I mean, it's crazy that the Shun one is the worst one.
Yeah, and who's to say, I mean, looking at how Shun looked like on Kobe versus how he's looked like in the past, this hip thing might be a long-term thing he's been dealing with, too, you know? So maybe that could go all the way back to, you know, July and August of last year, to be frank. But it's something where I think that the plan, it always was eventually to get the belt back onto Yoshioka. It was just, at what point do they feel like it was go time for it? And, you know, a moved Fukuoka date on a national holiday, and with the work that they had in that Osaka main event, did definitely feel like, in a certain manner, that it was like that they did not forget that Yoshioka beat Kakuta and King of Gate in December. Like, that was a nice thing to kind of see with that. But I do think that we are now also at the point in Gaja Dokuro that they're at 7, and 7 is when you're kind of getting to a point where you're getting situations where, like, you had 3 Gaja Dokuro matches in Osaka, and you might, the company has been running 7 match cards. And I think part of that is now that you have such a big kind of like heel unit and you're kicking off the year that, like, you're trying to get everyone possible on these shows at this point, that, like, at a certain point, you're not going to need to have 3 Gaja Dokuro matches on the show. And I think you immediately look at, like, people that aren't necessarily, like, in that Kakuta mold as, like, people that might be on their way out of the unit. And maybe from there, you start to see a little bit more of the identity that you're hoping for.
Yeah, very much so. As for the Shimizu stuff in Nagoya and in Osaka, let's talk about that, because I thought all of these matches are worth your time. I thought the multi-man match on the afternoon Nagoya show was quite entertaining. I loved the way that match began with Gaja Dokuro jumping Natural Vibes during their entrance. You know, normally the Dragon Gate trope that you see is the two teams would be in the ring, stand across from one another. You would do the babyface entrance, or you would do the heel intros and then the babyface intros. And the moment that last babyface is introduced, the heels would jump them. But they jumped them during the entrance, which in Dragon Gate is a novelty. You know, that's the type of thing that maybe in American wrestling that wouldn't resonate whatsoever. But that felt very novel in the context of this promotion. And then you have in the evening show the UT versus Shimizu singles match, which outside of Okada versus Tanahashi is, I think, the best thing that I've seen so far in 2026. And you have UT cash Shimizu with a plancha during his entrance. That would then continue the next night in Osaka, where Shimizu and Strong Machine J went at it right away. So when you watch all of these things in succession, it was a really strong weekend of storytelling, and I think it was highlighted by the 2 Shimizu matches in Nagoya.
Yeah, it is the thing that, like, the Return of Shimizu DVD would be very easy to make, and you would be seeing some of the best stuff in the promotion, at least as of January 2026, so it would be accurate. I want to touch on the Nagoya building in a minute, but let's talk about the matches before we get into that. I loved the day main event, a Natural Vibes versus Kakuta, Shimizu, and Kato. I thought that really how they... From the turn on, how they've executed everything with what Natural Vibes going at this guy and making that like the point of, oh, he takes everyone's big shots and then he just goes no nonsense and just goes through and starts tearing through UT and using that kind of as the backbone of this match also to build the evening main event, and UT being able to, in the last exchange, catch Kato with Passion, getting at least the babyface win in the hometown to start off the night. It just was like a real solid, I was not notebook on it. I was 3.5 on this one, but a real solid, like, TV kind of main event kind of style match that, like, after the big turn that happens in Kobe, what is main eventing the next show in Dragon Gate? Well, all the people that Shimizu turned on immediately want to get their hands on it, and it played off exactly how you would want it to play off. And Shimizu feels great working with Kato, and that is a really fun pairing. I feel like that will be a delight when we start to get to see more of these two guys teaming. And I think that I know Kato has the All Asia thing with Ishin right now, and that would be kind of the direction for Rey de Parejas. But I'm ready for down the line when you're starting to get Shimizu and Kato teaming together, because I feel like those two could be a whole lot of fun as a monster heel team.
I liked how, I'm glad you said that. I liked how immediate all of this booking was to go from, hey, I'm back, I'm wrestling tomorrow, I turn heel, we're going to change the card so that I'm wrestling Natural Vibes in Nagoya, we're going to do it on both shows, and by the way, Strong Machine J, I want you in Osaka, and then KZ, I'll take you in Cork. And I really like the immediacy of all this. Sometimes I complain about Dragon Gate not having feuds that are drawn out enough and maybe burning stuff a little bit too quickly, but this feels like a call for action in a way that's appropriate. And I also think that's the charm of that afternoon show main event, and I ended up going 4 stars on this, because whereas I went 4 stars on D Courage versus Gacha Dokuro in the main event of Osaka, because that was just a classic Dragon Gate 6-man tag that you could plop into any era and I think it would be a successful match, you really felt the stakes in the context of Gaja Dokuro and Natural Vibes, and specifically Shimizu and UT, both in that multi-man match and then in their singles match. You felt the level of hate that you should have. All of their actions felt justified. UT trying to escape these monsters in that multi-man main event. You know, I liked the spot where he had Shimizu in sort of a triangle choke, and then Shimizu just hoisted him up and placed him in the arms of Kakuta, who then did like a waistlock giant swing on UT, just in a way that made UT look like a child. There was so much great stuff like that. You have UT countering the shot put slam with the DDT towards the end of the match, and then the great finish with UT surviving a box attack and then hitting the flash put on Kato for the win. But this did not feel like one of those quietly great Kobe Sambo Hall trios matches that we always say, oh, if this was on Dynamite, it would be the talk of the wrestling world, but it's just one of those Dragon Gate 6-mans. This felt different than the other stuff we saw throughout the weekend, and I mean that as a huge positive.
Right, like, it felt completely deserved and earned, and like, yeah, no, I feel like whatever card you had on your iPad, Ryo Saito, after the events of Kobe, you had to have this match there, and you know, like, the way that they kind of worked at this building, I think this kind of is the time to talk about it here in this main event, where the reality of this Nagoya, let me get the exact name of the venue. I had it for a second ago. The Nagoya Legend Hall, that their International Legend Hall, is that it looks like a room that you'd be very familiar with, Case. It looks like a small live house that they got 250 in there. Probably would if there was a band performing, you can get 400 in that building, if maybe that. And there was no real dives because of the ceiling being low of the lights. The sound was incredible, blaring at sometimes. And because of like the realities of this building, the fact that they jumped and did a crowd brawl and saved it for like that main event felt incredibly deserved at that point. And it was like a case of using a building that it in ways that reminded you of Kobe Chicken George, but it also reminds you like how far away are we from the times of Kobe Chicken George in a way case, because like Kobe Chicken George, it was like everyone was like crowding around and you had like a little rope around the ring, and it felt like really like you put a Dragon Gate or that time Torimon show on in the middle of a music club, like a performance venue. Here it felt like that they were trying, that this was the venue that they found, and they were trying to make it all fit in there and trying to, you know, make the best of a kind of worse situation. At least that's how it felt like to me.
I like the venue. It looks like a nicer version of Chicken George. That's the obvious comp, but they can get their full size
electric
ring
ballroom
in there.
Maybe in Progress Days, like a smaller electric ballroom in Camden.
I think it works for the promotion. I think, you know, it's a really tough loss for this promotion to not have the Nagoya Conference Hall there, because that was a venue that they would put 1,000 fans in, and now they have to run two shows to get 500, and that's two shows at 500 if it sells out. So you're seeing the shrinking margins at play there in a way that all of the Japanese wrestling industry is suffering from right now, but Dragon Gate seems to be particularly hard by some venues closing. We, you know, a few years ago were really dialed into Nagoya specifically and how it felt like Dragon Gate might have been closer to New Japan in that specific market than anybody else was as close to New Japan in any other market. And now they've lost their two venues there. And so they have this place that I liked. I thought it looked good on camera. You know, it's one of those deals where I don't think, in all actuality, I don't think this venue is that different than across Fukuoka, but there was something about the aesthetic of this venue that I just thought worked with the promotion in a way that, even as we sit here approaching year 6 or 7 of across Fukuoka, that I've just never been able to vibe with.
I don't know if I agree with the across Fukuoka thing, because across Fukuoka to me feels just like a better version of Kobe Art Center at this point, where you have a ring with a like a performance, like more of like a theater hall where they put the ring down at the opera seats or the orchestra, but like, and then you have everyone kind of in bleachers and it looks kind of like a NWA power taping. This one, it really did kind of feel like that the ring was able to be set in there, and like you had to work around it. And I thought the work was great considering the physical constraints there. I thought that it actually added a lot to someone like Cielo, who we did not necessarily saw that aspect of until these kind of two shows here. But it's something where it's just like the toughness of this kind of market, where like you're going from usually 600, 700. And it's not just like that you had this happen with the Congress Center. They're in the new, or it's not new, but they're in a new building for the Nagoya Big Show at the end of April here. And it's a lot of kind of change in that market that we felt like at a time that was kind of a key to success. That's now completely, at least with like the situation as it looks like, completely off the table.
And that show, by the way, because I think that broke in the week that we were off, that is Golden Coliseum, which is going to be at the Aichi Prefectorial Budokan on Sunday, April 26th. Tickets will go on sale at the end of this week for that. So I don't have any early indication of maybe what early ticket sales would have looked like. And I don't see a return date for this venue on their schedule, which is a bummer, because I like this place. I would like to see more shows here.
I would like to see Rita do more matches here. Rita is a guy that I feel like it taps into him with it.
I agree. Well, and again, you know, we closed out this set of shows with this Shimizu versus UT singles match, which, like I said, you know, not counting Okada Tanahashi, it's the best thing that I've seen this year.
Easily. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I was 4.25 on it.
I was 4.5 on it, because I got so into the finishing stretch of this match. I was just really, really eating up the work that they were doing. And I think part of that, you know, maybe that quarter star bump is what I was talking about in the multi-man match, where this wasn't a UT versus Shimizu match that would have made sense within the confines of 2013 or 2019 or 2016. This was one that was worked for this specific moment. And I thought both of these guys thrived here. My favorite spot of the match, in 2026, you know, 2025, a rare Dragon Gate production win is the way they shot from the bottom rope, UT slapping around Shimizu, slapping him in the face, and Shimizu being completely unaffected by it. And then Shimizu hit him with one slap that completely took him off of his feet. UT looked dead, and then Shimizu started stomping on the back of his head after that. That shot looked so beautiful. It conveyed everything great about this new Shimizu character. It conveyed everything that has made us love UT for almost 15 years now. That, to me, in a match full of great spots, was far and away to me the highlight of this match.
Yeah, it was just like, because of the ring and everything, you have like the UT dive as like the big outside spot of the show, and then him picking up UT, like picking him apart, going the arm, going Yave in certain kinds of ways, and just like Shimizu eventually powering his way out of it in different sort of ways, whereas UT like overwhelms him for like the first like third of this match. And then there's a moment where Shimizu's in the corner and UT bounce goes to the diagonals because he was going to go do a running forearm, and it was at that moment that Shimizu just blasted through him. And at that point, it was UT holding on for a life, using his body for a jungle gym, converting the big boss press into the Bien Yave, into the Bien Yave Perfecto.
And don't blow past that. UT had Shimizu and the Bien Yave Perfecto, which is his super finisher. And Yoshiki Kato at that point distracts the ref, and Gajah Dokuro ran in and break up that submission. I feel like in some Korakuen or Uno Dos Tres or what's the Golden Coliseum, that spot is going to come back in a big multi-man match at some point. Do not forget that.
Yeah, and at that moment, UT tries to continually just fight out of it, that Shimizu's added, instead of doing the last ride or razor's edge that he would do, now it's just a sit-out powerbomb, and it looks like he drives the guy through the mat. Awesome kick out there, but then he goes for the shot put slam. UT tries to fight out of it once, but then the second time
he counters with a standing Fujiwara armbar, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and then the second time he gets absolutely destroyed by it, three count, just insane stuff. And I love that they took stuff from this match. And when we talk about Strong Machine J versus Big Boss Shimizu, the whole you shouldn't have given Shimizu the distance so he could do it, blast out of the corner for shoulder tackle, that spot comes into play the next night against Strong Machine J, because Strong Machine J is able to weather that, and he's able to fight out and be able to still have a level of control at that time, whereas UT was not able to, and that was the start of the end for him.
Absolutely. Again, just the way all of these matches really blended together, I thought was special. And if Shimizu versus UT was a David versus Goliath style of battle, it was great to see Strong Machine J in that position where he didn't look quite as frail or weak at times as UT did just because of his size. But I really like when we have Strong Machine J in these positions where he's working from underneath and he has to fight back, because he shows at this stage in his career so much fire when he's in that spot. And this is one of those matches where I was blown away by the continued short-lived comebacks from Strong Machine J, noticeably Shimizu going for the big boss splash, missing, and then Strong Machine J hitting a bridging German suplex on Shimizu.
Just,
I mean, it was absolutely stunning the way that he did this. And then from there, you know, I feel like the finish of this match, which I did not enjoy as much as the Nagoya ones, but I still thought was very good and worth your time. I thought they did enough to protect Strong Machine J. I thought they fed just enough into the heel antics of the group, and I thought they did just enough to protect Shimizu in the long run. And overall, again, from 1-8 in Kobe to 1-11 in Osaka, everything in between, I thought they just painted such a beautiful picture of Shimizu, and the work that they did with him was so strong. And we now sit here a few days away from a KZ singles match in Korakuen, which should be ripe with emotion, should be packed with storytelling. And it is
main
the
eventing,
thing on is it main event or semi-main event?
It's main eventing. They're not putting WADA in the main event case.
No. I thought there was a Gaja Dokuro multi-man in the main event. Cork and Hall. Main event is Yoshioka Daya Tanaka versus Kakuta Minoru Lee. This is second from the top. The Asia tag, the all-Asia tag match is going to be match five right before intermission.
This is what I get for going to their roster page instead of the Spora blog.
This I've got this from the Dragon Gate English Twitter. Maybe Jay has it wrong.
No. I am looking at it now. And all right, no, that's 112 card. Give me one sec. I get that. Nope, they have it on the Spora, at least as KZ and Shimizu main eventing.
Oh, interesting. Yes, they do. And they've got, yeah, okay. And they've got match six is the All Asia tag match. And then, oh, this is a different card than the one Jay has on Twitter. So this is, sorry, I'm going to have to work this. So Tanaka and Mather, Strong Machine, Jay and UT, that is the same. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about Marcus Mathers here in just a second because I'm excited about that. Oh, I'm looking at the Edion Osaka card. Hold on. Buckle up, everybody. I'm doing lie. I can't find what I'm looking for here. Where is, son of a bitch, where is this at? No, this is, I'm looking at the right thing. This has,
I'm dropping this
so confusing. Do you have the Twitter link? Because I'm so confused on what I'm looking at.
I'm looking at the Japanese side.
Whatever. I'm sure you're right. Shimizu versus Casey's headlining. I'll shut up. And All Asia tag a second from the top. That's fine. Tanaka and Mather, Strong Machine, Jay and UT. Okay, yeah, this has the Himari return. Okay, all right. I don't know what I was looking at. I apologize. You're right. That is main eventing, which actually makes me even more excited for it.
Yeah, no. Just like one last note on the SMJ match that he had. I just like, it is like something about how they went from going to the German suplex right into a machine lariat, the machine suplex. That's where you get a ref pull, interference, power bomb, and shot put slam. I was four on this, and I have to say right now, after the first week of 2026, our most outstanding wrestler, I think, is Big Boss Shimizu. At least for me, at least he's been
exceptional. My number one would be Shimizu. My number two would be Daisuke Sakamoto. So maybe we are going back to 2016. It feels good.
Ah, oh, man, 2016.
Not a good year. And there's now
not
like,
a good year.
I don't know. I don't know if you're on TikTok, but there's like a whole 2016 nostalgia thing going on. And I keep on having to tell people, it's like, no. Like, 2016 in real time was considered to be the worst year ever.
Yeah.
And now things have only gotten exponentially worse in the following 9 years. But that was, in 2016, it was like, what else could go wrong? This year is cursed. We need to move on. And now I don't like the nostalgia of 2016. It's really bugging me.
Yeah, Case, I'm not on TikTok. I'm turning 40. Like,
I think it's also people your age generating that all that traffic there. I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
I hate to say it. It's a fun app. I'm not on there dancing or anything, but it does. I just every once in a while I find something on there that really hits my sweet spot. It's very fun. It's very bad for your brain, but it's very fun.
Yeah. Should we talk about Mathers here? But before we talk about other stuff, since you brought him up,
let's talk about Mathers and let's talk about the Brave Gate here, because I can tie those two together.
Yeah, because I feel like they are going to be tied together by the end of it. So it was announced that Marcus Mathers of WWE ID and the GCW JCW stable is doing a tour of Dragon Gate starting at Cork, and he is going to be an assistant of D Courage, which is something that I feel like we have been wanting for a long time, return to assistant / getting more people into D Courage. He is notably under 83 kilos. And I know Lanza, I listened to Lanza's kind of point about it, about how they had the link with Noah, obviously, but choosing Dragon Gate for someone who at least still is nominally a little bit in the WWE pipeline, case, like sending him to Dragon Gate. Yes, absolutely. That's like the best case scenario for him. I forget who he was against on that ETU show. I know
it was Dragon Kid on the ETU show and KZ on the Dragon Gate USA show last year.
Yeah. And he's had that kind of work scene kind of as a tryout. I'm excited for him. I hope that working with Dragon Gate can kind of break him out of some of the bad WWE ID habits that I've noticed of him at that KZ show. But it's good to see more foreigners come into the promotion, and especially seeing like how vibrant and important the Dragon Gate pipeline was for the indie boom and really wrestling and major North American wrestling for the last 15 years. It's nice to see it kind of being revived a little bit with someone who's easily one of the top 10 independent wrestlers in the country.
It's funny having somebody reach out to me that doesn't really follow American wrestling, and they weren't sure what the ID program was or if they should worry about it. And thinking back to how worried all of us were at WrestleMania weekend last year about how it might affect certain things to what it is now, which is, I mean, the only name I know attached to it still is Mathers, which I think in some weird way speaks to his talent. It's just crazy the way that all of that has changed, but I'm all for it. I think he's immensely talented. I don't know if Dragon Gate, or at least the people that are helping facilitate Mathers coming to Japan, I don't know if they view WWE as the enemy in the way that I think they should.
They don't.
I think you're right. And so I'm still a little bit concerned about that. And that is, you know, look, I mean, if you're a Japanese wrestler who is in the office of Dragon Gate and you don't really follow American wrestling, but you know that Gabe Sapolsky can be your point of contact on something, okay, well, you've done business with Gabe on and off for 20 years now. I understand why if you're not ingrained in the politics of it all, why you wouldn't have the concerns that maybe you or I have. The thing that I'm trying to think of here as we sit here and talk about Mathers, is he the first American wrestler to come over since Willie Mack?
I think it would be him or I don't know the situation of El Kukui.
Oh, okay. Kukui at the very least is based in America.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That would make sense. But at the very least, I mean, you're talking about Kukui. You know, I mean, Kukui, is based in America, but is a luchador, all things considered.
Right, yes,
so you're still, I mean, you're talking about Monte Flamita and Bandito and Pantera Jr., who I was just looking at his cage match. I forgot he did a Cork and Date for Dragon Gate in 2024, and Demus, and all the guys that come in have all been luchadors. I think this is the first American style wrestler they've had since Willie Mack.
No, I think you're absolutely right about it. And especially like getting someone from who is at least from like that GCW, JCW kind of talent pool, which is, you know, for better or for worse, this is not necessarily the place here. Like, that is kind of seen as the pinnacle of the U.S. Indies at this point. And I think that that's notable as well. You know, I mean, the GCW Dragon Gate relationship still kind of existing with Mania this weekend or this year as well. I think that it could be seen as a lot of things at once, too.
Absolutely. It's really intriguing. And, you know, as we have our spotlight on America for just a second, you know, I'm privy to the list of Dragon Gate wrestlers that are coming over for WrestleMania weekend. And I promised the person that I got the list from that I wouldn't break it on this podcast. It'll all come out in due time. Unfortunately, I think for you and I, there are two noticeable names not on that list that will probably mean that neither of us are going to make the trip this year. But in terms of whatever the Dragon Gate USA show is going to be on that Wednesday night, they have a pretty large roster to choose from with the guys that are coming over, plus Estrella.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, a Willie Mack, plus maybe a Mike Seidel, you know, the Rich Swann,
Panther
the guys
Brothers
that were there last year, Panther Brothers. And now if you have Mathers, if he is able to succeed on this tour and you're able to put him in a real place of prominence on that show, that is going to be a really intriguing card, because looking at the names that are coming over, there's an a few guys that have never wrestled in America before that are going to be making their American debuts, which I'm excited about. I'm curious to see how they're going to do there. I could see that Dragon Gate USA show maybe being headlined by a big singles match. We'll see. They've certainly got enough names and enough weird combinations of guys they can throw together to where they can do, you know, a big six-man tag again, which I would certainly expect on one of those shows. I just don't know which one, but it's an interesting list. I'll say this. It is by definition an interesting list. Again, a few names that I wish would have been on there that are not, but an interesting list where if Mathers is able to really succeed in Japan, and I don't know how long he's going to be over, I'm going to try to figure that out. But if he's able to come into WrestleMania weekend feeling like a core member of the Dragon Gate roster, that show gets much, much more interesting.
Yeah, and I do think that it's at least going to be for like Mathers. Like there is a very obvious best case scenario for him on this tour, and that is to get a Tanaka Brave Gate shot. Like I feel like if we, given how everything is, and even like if it's not going necessarily that great, I think he's instantly kind of coming in and would your eye kind of goes to that kind of situation just because of the kind of Brave Gate run that Ryoya Tanaka's had, that it does kind of feel like that he needs to have like an international outsider as a challenger. And they made a big point of saying that Mathers was Brave Gate weight. So I think that that potentially is on the table if things go well with them as well.
So I was talking to somebody about this in the immediate aftermath of the first Kobe show with Tanaka versus Rito, which I want to break down here. But I was telling somebody, I go, you know, I really think at this point, I don't know if they'll have Tanaka break the days held Brave Gate record, but I'm now fully convinced they're going to at the very least play with God and see if he can break the defense record. And this was before we had the news of Mathers coming over. So Jay on his Blue Sky account a few days later ended up laying out a possible scenario where you need to get to that 12th defense. That would be the one that breaks the record. He's at 7 right now. So you throw, you know, in my hypothetical, you throw Mathers in there at 8. You throw either Daiki or Fuda in there as defense number 9, Dragon Kid as defense number 10 in Aichi, and then you still have Daya to play with. You still have a UT rematch to play with. You still have a Kame rematch to play with. You still have a junior match to play with. If you give one title shot to Fuda or Daiki, you have the other one to play with. And then Jay and I were on the same page here where it feels like the match at Kobe World this year should be Tanaka versus Hyo for the Brave Gate belt, with Tanaka breaking the record against Hyo, who, as Jay pointed out, will likely be coming off of a Super Juniors tournament at that point in time, which I think would make everybody feel bigger, would feel bigger. But this Tanaka run just has so much steam to it still, and he's only getting better. I love the work D-Courage is doing right now. Not to do the most bland sports talk radio segment ever, but I think Dragon Daya has become grossly underrated. The work Daya does on a show-in, show-out basis is blowing my mind right now, and Tanaka's right there with him.
Yeah, and then on this Brave Gate defense, so from the show on the 8th, Ryoya Tanaka versus Rita, just a really like great show of like someone at least a little bit taking Tanaka to a limit. Seeing the lightning spiral being busted out of nowhere was kind of special here. And there's like certain things about how the two of them kind of work, and like Rita with his size being able to use that kind of as a as like his benefit, and especially like how it like was a real smooth opening going into Rita's wild tornado like Fosbury flop splash that he does. And it's just like incredible work between the two of them. A Retanic near fall, roll up out of the Crimson Splash. I don't know what the name is of the Billy King Kid move they used as the setup for the Sky Twister press, but that was tight as well. And I mean, really, this is what you would want to see out of the champion, out of like really like this. Is this his first defense since his injury?
For Tanaka, yes, it would be. Yeah.
So like his first defense coming off of the injury and off the layoff from that injury and just being just right off there to the races again. I like UT versus Shimizu more, but I also had this at 4.25 stars. And I think
the fact that this match wasn't the match of the weekend is incredible because I have it at 4.25 as well. And I just assumed this was going to be the best thing we saw on these shows.
Yeah, and I thought I'd be like, man, I'm going to have to get through these other four shows and then go back to the night one main event. But it just was just incredible, just smooth work from Tanaka, who just feels like he gets smoother every title defense. And it just feels more and more like he might not break the record or he's going that golden kind of road. But more so than like, and I felt like I said this a couple of years ago about Hyo in that Bravegate run, but this going for the record in the way that he has just kind of trounced that, and that this feels like the Bravegate reign to kind of be seen as the one that's up on a pedestal for this era, regardless on if he gets to 12 defenses or not.
Well, it feels like we've now fully transitioned out of the Kento, Daya, Hyo, Jason, sort of that Bravegate lineage for a year or two there, where the belt just once Kento was fully removed from it, because you know you got to remember the 2021 SB Kento Bravegate stuff was awesome. It felt like that was a success at the box office during the pandemic, and it was very exciting. You know, I still think about how big that UT match in Nagoya felt. I still think about the two Kame matches, Kobe and Cork, and how great those were. But once it went Daya, Hyo, Jason, Ishin, KZ, Ishin, Hyo, it just, there was that time there where the Bravegate belt did not feel like the Bravegate belt. Daya did great work to bring it back to a certain level. And then I love the way they've handled Yamato to UT to Tanaka. And now Tanaka feels like a generation-defining run. His work is so smooth. Rita's work is so vicious. I sent this match to somebody and I made the note. I go, I think Rita's offense looks better than most Japanese heavyweights at this point in time. Like, I really believe when you're wrestling Rita that he is killing you with his offense. So these guys blended so well together. My favorite spot of the match was not the Rita crucifix bomb, which Tanaka then popped up and hit a bridging German suplex on, which was absolutely insane. I have that in all caps in my notes.
Jerky that German was.
Oh, just the whole thing was just beautiful. Beautiful in like a fucked up way. But my favorite spot of the match, because I think it's a testament to how good Tanaka can be and how good this match was, how crisp this match was, was Tanaka at one point was going for that handspring into the ace crusher that he does, where he kind of Tajiri style bounces off the ropes and does the ace crusher. And Rita moved out of the way of that move. But Tanaka committed to that ace crusher movement in such an extreme way, in such a realistic way. That moment in time of watching Tanaka float through the air looking to grab Rita in an ace crusher when Rita's nowhere to be found, that felt so sports-like. That felt so real. That felt so engaging. And it's just that little five-second spot that I thought was really, really exemplary work from these two. And again, a match absolutely worth going out of your way and saying.
Yeah, no, I thought that it was just like absolute blast. Still kind of stunned that it was not my match of the week. Just great stuff. We have all this with Tanaka, but I do kind of want to have Rita have like this generation of Rita as a Bravegate run before it's all said and done. Like I think he's one, like as you're saying, like how vicious he is. He's like one of the most dynamic wrestlers working today, full stop. And it is a real bummer that, you know, it's something that like we'll see with how things go with like him and Love and Peace right now. But like, I want to see the more Rita and big profile matches. I hope that's the case with the Jackie Rita Twin Gate, but who's to see about that, especially with like Rey de Parejas essentially around the corner, what might go with that. But it was great to see that out of him here. The last match I wanted to spend a bit of time on, Case, was the main event from Osaka. D-Courage, Yoshioka, Daya, and Tanaka versus Madoka Kakuta, Jason Lee, and Kota Minoura. This was what I felt like the big main event Dragon Gate six-man tag that in a lot of ways you didn't kind of get on this week just because you had that Brave Gate match. You had Cielo and Kato. We'll touch on Cielo before we get out of here. And then all of the Shimizu stuff. We didn't really have like a true to form big Dragon Gate main event six-man tag up until we got to Osaka. And damned if we didn't have a notebook caliber main event that was like oddly highlighted by Jason Lee's heat on Dragon Daya, then the chemistry that he showed with Ryoya Tanaka. I know that Jason, there's no way that he's Brave Gate weight here, but like the chemistry shown between Tanaka and Jason in that Osaka main event wanted me to at least be like, okay, can we just get a special singles match between these two at least?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought, I mean, this was my favorite Jason performance in a while, and I thought he did very good work last year. I'm very much a fan of Min Lee and the way that they work as a team, but I thought Jason was the star of this match. He was unbelievably great, and you're exactly right. With Tanaka and with Daya in particular, I thought he was stunning. And then you have this great closing stretch, and you had this twice, because I loved the, I got to remember if it was the afternoon or the evening show now. It was, okay, so the evening Nagoya show, there was a Gaja Dokuro D-Courage match that I was frothing at the mouth for by the end of it. And then Dragon Daya slipped on his 619, and everything was fine. They carried on without it, but it just deflated me a little bit, and so I ended up going 4 flat on that. But they came back the next day and had an equally as great match, with my big takeaway being, you know, I thought the booking surrounding Kobe World 2023 Yoshioka versus Kakuta was a disaster, and they did not overcome those odds. I thought their King of Gate match was very disappointing, because the build going into it was pretty strong, and I kind of chalked it up to, okay, maybe these guys just don't have chemistry. But then I see them in these multi-man matches and they have unbelievable chemistry together, and so they're now making me want Yoshioka versus Kakuta 3 in a really bad way, which I can't believe, because I had sort of written off those two as a singles pairing, but God, they were great this weekend together.
Yeah, and notably, Yoshioka was the only person to actually come off the top ropes in that Nagoya venue in that, yeah, high fly fall finish. I kept track of that kind of thing. But and it did look like at least the eyes in Tanaka and Daya going, oh, he's going for this? Okay, for that. But yeah, it just was just a tremendous kind of main event. And yeah, I know I was higher on the King of Gate match than you were, but if they're able to pull the chemistry out of the trios matches and the things here, this should be an awesome Fukuoka main event. It's just the open question of why is it that they have not necessarily been able to do that in their one-on-one encounters up to this point.
It's very strange, but I was very encouraged by what I saw here. The evening Nagoya six-man was, I thought, really on its way to being something special, and that Daya slip-up just made it something. It was just like, ah, man, that's a bummer, because this was going to be a really, really great match that I was going to send out to people. But the Osaka main event was just your classic Dragon Gate six-man tag that would have gotten over in 2001, 2005, 2011, 2020, or now. It was such high level work from everybody involved.
Yep, absolutely. So like the last major topic on the five shows to kick off 2026, the mystery of El Cielo. It felt like after Johnny Valletta's Dreamgate challenge that Cielo was going to be the next one, but Yoshiki Kato said he was going to stand up and be the roadblock at the first shows of the year in Kobe. And that was the case, as Cielo versus Kato was the main event on the second night of the Kobe shows. Kato gets the win with the Caldera Luna after Shimizu interference. And then Cielo has a series of singles matches. I really like Cielo versus Mochizuki Jr. case.
I did as well.
We got to see some Yave from Cielo, and I think that's because of the ring and the building. And it was nice to see, and it felt really kind of cool, like that kind of match. But Cielo's off that Dreamgate kind of climb, and in Osaka in a singles match versus Ishin after a low blow pen for Ishin getting the win. Ishin was trying to force Cielo to talk and looked like he was trying to get to the point of trying to mask the guy, but it's Hamari who makes the save and says that he will be returning on the 18th in Cork and Hall, teaming with CLO. So Saipatra managed to get down to one member for 2 days, and now it's back to two, and Hamari's back after his 2 months on the shelf with his shoulder injury.
So I find the way that CLO is discussed to be sort of fascinating. I don't mean this in a demeaning way to say that people are being weird about him, but I do think people are being weird about him because, one, I think, look, maybe I'll be wrong a week from now and he unmasks Takuma Nishikawa and TN Revolution and we go from there. But I think he's El Cielo going forward. I think it's a cool character. I think he has great gear. I think his offense works well with his gear, with his whole persona. I think he's El Cielo going forward. And we all left the December Corkin with our eyebrows raised at the possible decision of him having a Dreamgate challenge, going like, oh, that man, we don't know if he's ready for that. Like, both from a booking standpoint and from an overall in ring standpoint, like, oh man, this seems like a lot for him. And then Kato beat him because he wasn't ready for that situation. Like, I thought all of this made sense. They are gung-ho on Yoshiki Kato right now. They're not gung-ho on El Cielo. And so they built up a babyface, then had a heel beat him. But I didn't look at it as anything other than that. This was done in part to make Yoshiki Kato look stronger, not El Cielo.
Yeah, and I think another issue that we have with CLO and like the conversations with CLO is like, think about how much CLO in ring we've really seen since he debuted/returned. He's been the most protected guy in that unit. They virtually had him doing kind of Benkei in 2017, just getting in, doing the spots, getting out of there. And it was only really until Hamari was hurt that he was getting significant ring time. So it made perfect sense to me in retrospect that you would do this. And then CLO has singles matches throughout the rest of the week. And until like he's able to have like those kinds of matches, like he's still kind of an open question. So maybe some of it is our working assumption of who it is and the expectations that he was having at that time when he returned and got hurt and went away, and not the reality that CLO is CLO. And I think you make a good point. I don't know if they're going to unmask this guy anytime soon. It feels like they're still trying to figure out who CLO is before going that kind of far. And maybe the worst thing for like the CLO character is the fact of how obvious it is that it is someone else who had a character before this. And I think that's playing with people's minds a little bit too much.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I think the work that he's doing is excellent. I really hope that Shun is healthy for Rey de Parejas, because I would really like to see Shun and CLO in that tournament together doing those crazy offensive combinations they have with one another. But I think we all would have felt really weird about Kakuta versus CLO headlining this Cork and Hall show or the next one. And maybe they still go back to it. I certainly would not advise that with the way that CLO was booked over the course of the week, but maybe they still go back to it. But to me, it was actually what we don't have enough of in wrestling. They built up another guy for the sole purpose of sacrificing him for somebody else. And it made Kato look strong. I think had the match been better, it would have been a little bit more effective. Yeah. But I seem to buy into whatever story they were telling here, and I don't see any audibles in the booking here. I'm not thrown off by it. I felt like Cielo versus Kato was 50-50 going into it, and the way that Kato was positioned, it was like, okay, no, this is what they wanted out of here, because I think Kato is on the cusp of being a major focus in this promotion, and I think he's ready for it. And as we move into the spring, I think you'll see Yoshiki Kato in some positions that maybe he's not been in before.
Yeah, and I think that come December case, there is a likely chance that Yoshiki Kato will be again like, okay, this is a Diamante situation where he was most improved, and then he improved upon himself as he's being put into these kind of roles. He is a lot closer to being put in those kind of roles than someone who's virtually only been wrestling since October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you know, for Kato, it's like it took him forever to get to this spot between health and, you know, sort of the baby deer nature that he had when he first debuted. But I'm ready for them to do something with him. I don't know if it's going to be this All Asia run or something maybe a little bit more serious. But again, it sort of goes back to that point about the heel unit I was talking about, where it's like, oh man, like, it's not that Kakuta's doing bad work, but Ishin and Shimizu and Kato, I just think, are doing better work right now.
And honestly, Kato might not be long for being a heel. Like,
that's true.
It was kind of surprising, like, talking with people in and around the company, like, how, like, much they viewed him as, like, a babyface. And, like, they were like, oh, yeah, no, like, we think that he has, like, that kind of thing. When, to me, it always felt like the heel was the natural role here. He could be one of the people fighting himself out of Gotcha Dokuro by the end of this year, and then we see where Gotcha Dokuro is in ending 2026 that in comparison to how they are right now entering 2026.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said.
Well, I think we've hit on all the big major points across the five shows that we had to cover tonight, Case. Was there anything from Kobe, Nagoya, or Osaka we left off that you want to touch on before we got out of here?
I don't think so. Just real quick, just to summarize my recommendations, I would watch on 1-8 the Shimizu promo and Tanaka versus Rita. On 1-9, I would watch Hyo Kame Jr. and Rita versus Sahara, Yanagiuchi, Kimura, and Fuda, which we didn't talk about, but that match is self-explanatory into why it was good. And then also on 1-9, Jason, Kai, Minora, and Kakuta versus Shimizu, KZ, Strong Machine, Jay, and Yuti. On the 1-10 afternoon show, Shimizu, Kakuta, and Kato versus KZ, Strong Machine, Jay, and Yuti. On the 1-10 evening show, Daya, Tanaka, and Yoshioka versus Ishin, Kai, and Kakuta, and Shimizu versus Yuti. And on 1-11 in Osaka, Shimizu versus Strong Machine, Jay, and Daya, Tanaka, and Yoshioka versus Jason, Kota, and Madoka Kakuta.
So the only stuff that I would add into that we didn't touch on, I thought the semi-main event of 1-8 was really good. Not notebook level, but Ben and Jackie versus Shun and Cielo, I thought was a fun performance. And
I agree. Fun TV style match.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then by and large, I'm trying to think of stuff that I liked that we didn't mention too much. I really like Cielo versus Mochizuki Jr. I was 3 3/4 on it, Case. I thought that Junior showed some pluck that we don't always see from him with this. And then with the venue, Cielo working more Yave and just like catching the JoJo knee into like his power bomb and going to the closing stretch, I thought was really kind of tight. I think it's like an 8-minute match. It's worth your time with that. And then really, I agree with you on the 10th and the 11th. I thought that those were those matches were the ones really kind of worth watching. They've done the All Asia build with Mochi Fuji, but it's clear like they're leaving the gas in the tank for Korakuen versus having a killer match in Osaka in the lead up to it.
I think Mochi has looked really good, and I do worry, and I hope that by this time next week I'm eating my words. I'm not sure Fuji can still go at any real level, but I thought Mochi looked awesome in Osaka.
Yeah, it's gonna be Mochi's wind. Really? Oh, or sorry, it's Fuji's wind that I would have the question about, to be honest with that. Let me run down the Korakuen Hall card. We'll have our review of it next week. We have an opener. It is Ryoya Tanaka teaming with Marcus Mathers in his Dragon Gate debut versus Strong Machine J and UT. Match 2, Ultimo with Daiki Sahara, who was pulled from shows, but looks like he'll be back for this one. And Kimura versus Naruki Doi Torun Owashi, Problem Dragon, and Punch Tominaga. Hamari's return with Cielo versus Minoli. Love and Peace, 10-man. It's the entire Love and Peace group, along with going up against Paradox, Yamato, Dragon Kid, BB Hulk, Yokosuka, Susumu, and Kagatora. It does feel like you'll get a title match challenge coming out of that. Yoshioka and Daya versus Kakuta and Kai is your pre-intermission match. The All-Asia Tag Team Champions. Ishin and Yoshiki Kato versus Masaki Mochizuki and Don Fuji, with special guest referee Ryohei Wada representing the Pacific Wrestling Federation. Case, the tag rule and the 10 out and the 10 count on the outside will be enforced. This match will be in PWF rules. Maybe that goes to Fuji's favor in that way. And the main event for Korakuen on Sunday the 18th is KZ versus Shimizu, kind of ending the one-on-one portion of this Shimizu and Natural Vibes feud. But given how the first two matches in the series were, this one really has the expectations to be a blow away match. What do you think about this card?
I think it's a fun looking show. I'm really excited to see what Mathers does, and that main event has me very intrigued.
Yep, and we will be back next Tuesday to touch on that case. Anything else you want to get out of here? I guess we should extend our congratulations wishes to Shingo Takagi and Natsupoi before we get out.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. It's good for Shingo for proving the doubters wrong about his sexuality.
Hey, did you read the Tokyo Sports article?
I haven't had a chance yet. I'm going to, but I haven't gotten around to it.
It is really kind of cute. It is like, oh yeah, no, like we met each other at Yamanashi, and then she would travel up to Yamanashi to see Shingo, and the idiots decided to get married because Hiroki Goto told them to in a promo after Shingo's title match against Hiroki Goto. That was the inspiration. Like, they immediately got engaged afterwards.
Huh. All right. Well, shout out to Hiroki Goto.
Yeah. I mean, the future Japanese wrestling, I think, can be strong with potential Takagi children. Let's just make sure that they're all like started towards like strength and dexterity, because the intelligence in that family is not going to be the strong point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, buddy, I think that's going to do it for this week, unless you have anything else.
I do not.
You can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate, both on Twitter and on Blue Sky. You can join the conversation in the Voices of Wrestling Discord. That's where there's the Dragon Gate channel, live tweeting throughout the shows, match of the week up there, as well as the Open the Voice Gate channel. Whenever we have our special shows, that's where we post the schedule for that. And when those days comes back for 2026, that's where we also have our match listings in that as well. But that's going to do it for us on this first Voice Gate of 2026. We'll be back with you next week talking about the first Cork and Hall events of the year for Dragon Gate. Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungi AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, the Bad, and the Hungi every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.